Mr. Cochrane, Royal 19. We're talking about when you've taken up these positions on a slope facing 0.593. What were conditions like there? I mean, the foxholes, were they just... Were they connected in time, or were they just...
No, they were separate... I suppose one could get a section, which in theory was a lance corporal or corporal and seven or eight men, perhaps in two foxholes. They were scattered round, and the fact that you couldn't move between them in daylight meant that the officers and the NCOs weren't, they were with some of their men, but only some of their men. And this meant that only at night that you could really see what was going on, how people were. It was therefore very difficult to keep morale up, because officers, certainly NCOs also, should be with their soldiers, not at some distance from them, at a company level. And this meant that it couldn't have been a worse introduction, really, to warfare for a raw battalion. And it was amazing, in fact, how well they stuck it. There was nothing to do in the daytime except brew up the rations that you'd been given the previous night and just sit tight.
Now, there's one story that interests me from your book about a chap who lost his nerve. And can you tell me about that?
Well, yes. Not surprisingly, he one night going around, I found this chap. He'd broken down completely, and if we had not had a steady trickle of casualties from the mortars during the day and at night as well sometimes, I think I would certainly have said sent him back with the ration party. As it was, I talked to him so slowly and quietly and got him calmed down, and then I got rather rough with him and said that the others were all sticking it, this bloody awful place we were in, and why couldn't he pull himself together and stick it with his mates? And he did pull himself together and said, yes, he'd stick it out. I'll fold it, he said, using the Scots word. And the next night he was killed by a mortar bomb. And I felt that a death that really lay on my mind. You could have argued it was unnecessary death, that it wasn't very likely that the Germans were going to attack us up in that position any more than we were going to attack them. But, and I think if we had not had this steady dribble of casualties, I would have sent him back. But I didn't, and he was killed. And that has been on my mind for a long, long time. The casualties were the casualties were sort of more, in a way, proportionately worse amongst the officers, because I my second in command, he was wounded and he was evacuated. One a chap had he'd had ear trouble. He got totally deaf as a result, I suppose, of an explosion. And when I say totally deaf, he was absolutely stone deaf, couldn't hear a word, either from me or from his soldiers in his platoon. So he had to be sent back. A chap called Robin Collier, one of the platoon commanders, he was wounded, he was sent back. Wolfe were very happy, though he wasn't, poor fellow, to get another officer who just arrived at the battalion sent up to us. But it must have been a very difficult situation for him, because he'd no idea. He never, for 3 weeks, saw the soldiers in his platoon, except at night. I mean, he never set eyes on them properly until we got relieved from that position.
What was the mortar fire like to be under?
It was sporadic. You could never be quite sure. And then every now and again there was an actual bombardment. And it was mostly these produced wounds rather than immediate casualties. There were several of the casualties died of the wounds by the time they'd been got down to the bottom of the hill. Because, of course, getting people down as far as the mules, there was stretcher bearer, had to be stretcher bearers, and on these really very precipitous tracks down the hillside, the steep hillside, to get somebody down on the stretcher, had to be tied on, of course, because of the slope, otherwise it just slid off. It really wasn't easy. And I don't know which was worse, really, for the carrying party, getting the ammunition and grub to us, or getting the casualties, the ones who couldn't walk, getting them down again.
Was sniping a problem?
Well, we learned to be careful. No, it was before we learned that most movement was impossible. There were places, there was ridges or rocks you could belly crawl from A to B. But even then, you had to be careful in case the snipers had changed their position overnight and were on at a new angle. So we did. I can't remember actually anybody being hit by a sniper. I suppose it must have happened. The damage was the mortar shelling, the mortar bombing.
No artillery then?
Very little. The artillery that we were shot up with was our own.
Tell me about that.
Well, it happened at Kerin. I mean, it was the same. This was, again, a replay of Kerin, but in snow instead of in heat. One advantage of the snow was that the dead all over the place, they didn't stink as they did at Kerin. But in mountain warfare, the artillery is always trying to get just over the top of your ridge to hit the enemy ridge. And it doesn't take much of an error to find the clipping your ridge. And really, it's bad enough being shelled from the front, so to speak, but being shelled up your backside, it really is the most shaking thing that soldiers can face. The gunners tend to believe that infantry can't tell which way a shell is going. So it's fortunate, Kerin, luckily, we did have FOOs, forward observation officers, up with us. And they could verify very quickly and get onto their battery to say, oi. But a casino, it was different because there was a major shoot, not just by the divisional artillery, but the whole corps artillery. And this included heavy guns as well as the field guns. And on one occasion, for about 15 minutes, we had intense bombardment. But very curiously, we had no casualties from it, except that if the Germans had cared to walk towards us in the next half hour, they had an absolute walkover. Because honestly, we really were paralyzed. It was such a frightening experience. Didn't happen again, fortunately, but it was not pleasant.
What about air attack from either side?
Well, we got There wasn't very much German activity. Fighters occasionally zoomed over the bowl and shot it up. Again, that caused casualties, but again, nothing as like the casualties inflicted in the bowl by that. Actually was usually artillery fire rather than mortars. I don't think we were shot up by our own aircraft at Cassino. When they bombed the monastery, the story went, we all hoped it was true, that army headquarters had been bombed by mistake as well. Whether that was true or not, I don't know. We were, it was very easy in the desert and at Kerin to get bombs, but they were comparatively small bombs dropped on one, because it was very difficult from on the air to see exactly where the demarcation lines were between A and B.
Now, what about the cold and the snow? How did you cope with that, and how did you uniform? Did you have extra kit? Or?
Well, we got, at one point we were in the bowl, we got a whole load of what were called comforts, and we were in battle dress. We got issued with very useful leather jerkins, like waistcoats, if you like, but lined with khaki cloth. They were sort of dark brown leather. They helped. The comforts included sort of woolly hats, mufflers, knitted mitts, this kind of thing. And so we were in the bowl when we got these. So actually, there was something to do, because we'd nothing much else to do down there except wait for our turn to go forward. So I organized a sort of raffle. And everybody, you know, drew lots, and whoever, you know, you went and picture what you wanted, and your ticket came up. And I remember that the thing nobody wanted was the first one we'd ever seen, was a string vest. So I took that, and my God, I found it useful. It was something nobody had seen, and nobody certainly wanted it. Now these, of course, your boots, that was the trouble, because it really was impossible, Cassino, to get your boots off and your socks dry. There's no place to hang them to get dried, if you like, except wear them round your neck. And nobody wanted particularly to be caught barefooted or with only their socks on, so your boots were constantly wet.
Did that cause feet problems, with trench feet, or what's it called in the film?
Didn't get that. I think if we'd... I remember my father talking about that in World War I. That was when you were actually spending days and days ankle deep in wet mud. Being on this steep hillside, it drained pretty well. So even the little foxholes, which are partly slip trenches, partly a little revetment of loose stones and rocks around them, they didn't get too wet.
Now, what about the food? What food was brought up for you, and how did you cook it, and what was it like?
We got, first of all, the food had to be portable, A, by the mules, and B, by the whoever was on carrying duty, which meant that it was basically bully beef, and as in the desert, the ingredients for tea. I mean, a sandbag full of tea and sugar, and the tins of condensed milk. Somehow or other, I've forgotten now, because we had obviously no motor transport up there, but we did have some petrol. I think we had a jerry can of petrol for the company. And at night, one of the things one did was pour petrol into each little section's stove. And the stove, again, is the desert trick. You've got a tin, like an old condensed milk tin, and you punched holes in it, and you poured in the desert sand into it. Casino, it was pretty wettish earth that you scraped up, and poured petrol in the earth and set a match to it. And burned, didn't flare up like petrol normally did, unless you overdid pouring of it in. And you could, in your mess tin, cook, heat up bully beef and whatever else they'd sent up. Occasionally you got tins of something as well as bully beef. There was a kind of ration stew thing which you could use. But there was no question, you couldn't have a company cookhouse. And you couldn't bring up, for instance, which was, you could later on in the campaign, the cooks could cook behind the line and then send up on a jeep a big, well, like a huge thermos tin with enough soup or stew in it to feed half the company, and a couple of those kept you going. At Casino, that wasn't possible. So it was a very unpleasant battle at all points of view.
Were you short of water, or despite...
I never remember that. I suppose with all the snow around, we just melted snow. And I think, unlike Kieran, where water had to be brought up, I can't remember water coming up. But it may have done. Perhaps it would have been thought too unhygienic to make one's, boil up one's tea, sugar, and just in snow water. That I can't remember.
And what about latrines? Was that, I mean, obviously...
Well, there was an attempt to have latrines, but in fact, you couldn't use a latrine except after dark. In fact, you more or less sat where you were, away from your little foxhole. There was, we had attempted down the hill a bit to make a sort of latrine, but it was a pretty sketchy affair. We weren't the first people who had just had a ship all over the hill. Again, you know, it was cold. So you pulled your breeks down and you functioned as fast as you could to pull your breeks up again. They were very glad to get out, as eventually we did.
You didn't make an attack yourselves. As you said, you were just holding the position.
Yes.
Anything else happened while you were up there in particular? Or was it just this routine?
Just this routine.
How long were you up there for?
Well, we're in this forward position for about 3 weeks. The difficulty was, I used to change the platoons around. They were the usual for two forward, one back. I could change those around at night. But the problem of having a company handover in the dark was really too much. And so it wasn't possible for Gordon Munro to swap the companies around. So we just had to stick it where one was for 3 weeks. Then eventually we got pulled back. We were told we were going to be, the position was going to be taken over by another battalion. And that was a bit chaotic, again in the dark. And I can see, I mean, it was bad. Well, it was the same problems as would have been the case changing our companies around to get a company from another battalion into the same positions in the dark and try and explain in the dark where the danger, the lines of danger were for snipers. And then, of course, the battalion was all back in the bowl. With God knows how many mules. They must have been getting on for 100 mules in there. And so we had to load all our kit. When I say kit, I mean not personal weapons like one's rifle and so on, but or even the sections Bren gun, but the mortars and a lot of other stuff had to be loaded on these mules. It was pitch dark, no moon at all that night, and it looked chaotic, I suppose, in the way it was, but I felt very pleased because the company was the officers and the NCOs were giving orders about the organising of the loading and getting the mules off. They weren't bawling out at people, and therefore the jocks could hear these orders, which were sensible orders, and carried it, and they did well, because it could have been a really chaotic disaster. And of course everybody was very anxious to get loaded and get out, because we had to to get back to our own main lines. You had to cross a valley at the foot of or a shallow plain at the foot of the Casino Hills, which was shelled a lot, because in full view of the monastery still being used as a lookout point, observation point. So it was shelled at night too, because they knew this was when movement was taking place, but it was lucky dip shelling, well, not aimed shelling. And we all knew this, so nobody was wasting time about getting the mules loaded and getting off. And down at the bottom, the mules were unloaded into lorries, and then we got ourselves into lorries and drove like hell across this flat bit until we could get into cover and out of sight of the enemy observation people.
Now, where did you were going to rest?
And we were then taken. Yes, the whole brigade went back into rest.
Do you remember where?
Venafro, I think. I got all those dates correct and places correct when I wrote that book, because I had sort of rough diaries and letters I'd written to Louise, though the letters were correctly pretty lacking in information about what had been going on. But also I had the benefit of hindsight, in as much as in the historical records, the regimental history, there's a good deal of quotation from the war diary that was kept, which gives dates. So my memory at the moment is, without looking at the book, I can't, but I think it was a place called Venafro. And there we had a great clean-up, because we, of course, were filthy, wanted all bearded, and our clothes were lousy. So we got a clean kit, clean shirts. What was still wearable was sent off to be deloused. We had a sort of drumhead memorial service for the casualties, the chaps who'd been killed. We got mail. Getting pay, of course, was a purely academic thing. There was nothing to spend your pay on. And I think, in fact, most people, the pay wasn't drawn. I mean, it was just, if you like, banked or left to be drawn later as wanted. And that all helped. It sort of got the kinks, mental kinks out of us.
Did you drink much? When you came out of that?
There was
either you or the mess. Generally.
Oh, we had. When we got back to, I think it was Venafro, after our clean shirts and so on, there was an issue of beer, so we could all have a drink. In fact, I think the beer, as I recollect, wasn't so awful as the beer we got in the Western Desert, which tasted of onions. Well, I've forgotten what it was like, but anyhow, beer was available, and we had a beer. Up on the hill, we had had an occasional tot of rum, because the carrying party every so often did bring up a whack of rum for the company, which meant, perhaps a dessert spoonful, one swig per head, no more. But it helped to keep the cold out.
How long were you at Venafra?
I suppose we must have been there a week, 10 days, because we did need quite a lot. Nobody, I don't think we'd left any weapons behind, but a lot of kit was useless. And of course, the first and crying need was boots. Going up and down those rocky hills and the constant wet did mean that I don't think anybody had a signed pair of boots. But also, what cheered everybody up was that this was now the end of March, beginning of April. So, down below, the snow had gone, and in fact, there was some sunshine, which cheered everybody up.
So what happened next then?
I think what happened next, I'm sure I'm right, was that the division was detached from what was called the Fifth Army, Mark Clark's Fifth Army, and sent across right to the other side of Italy, to the Adriatic. And again, in the Adriatic, the spring was further advanced. And on the way there, one could see, you know, the fruit trees were starting to blossom. And generally speaking, and there were no Germans, so at least not for the time being. So it was a very welcome change.
And that would be in early April, would it?
I think early April. Then that was about the time we got a new CO.
That seems to be why they were at Castel Frentis.
Yes, Castel Frentano.
Frentano, yeah.
Yes.
Castle, that was where you went to, was it?
Yes.
And that was just billets, was it?
Tents, I think. Some tents. But in a lot of those places, one just had a bivvy. You know, instead of having a tent, you had a one or two man thing that was like the top of a tent, and you dug a square grave, if you like, and just put this over the top. And when it was dry, this was fine. I think that was Castel Frentano. We were in billets, I think, in the town. Where another place we were at for a bit, but we did have bivvies.
And what were the billets like?
You were dotted around in anything that, such. Depends really whether the town had been smashed up or not. If it hadn't been smashed up, there was always a school or a couple of schools, the equivalent of a church hall, maybe a sort of town hall. So you could get probably a company into a building. And and again, you cooked. You cooked by companies. You had a sort of company cookhouse. You fed by companies.
Now, what about this new colonel? That would be, was that Colonel Moggs Hill?
Yes.
I don't know what his real name was. Moggs is in the
MGO Hill, Colonel Hill, was always, he'd always been nicknamed, apparently, Moggs. He had been, he was a Cameron Highlander. He'd been seconded, I think, to another Highland regiment.